Good evening and welcome to This Week in Football on this July 12, 2017. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, joined as always by my co-host, Rob Rojas. And tonight, joining us as a special guest for tonight's show from Vavil and Dirty South Soccer is Harry Harris, also known on Twitter as HarryCFC underscore. Rob, what's going on, man? How are you tonight?
I'm doing well. You know, we just ended the Confederations Cup. I think the last time we spoke, you know, we saw a little bit of the Gold Cup, and we're going to be talking about, you know, I think one of the quietest transfer windows we've had in quite a while, don't you think, Joe?
Yeah. if it opened June 1st and ended June 1st, I think it would be maybe. But and it's funny you bring up the Gold Cup because if you come on and join us on Monday night's show on Monday's Low Limit Football. I'll definitely give a trip report from my experience at the USA-Panama match from this past weekend in Nashville. So before we jump in any further, I do want to get welcome in our special guest, Harry Harris. Harry, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, thank you for coming on. So what's great is tonight, we're going to talk transfers. We're really going to leave it as a transfer show. We've had an incredible flurry of activity over the past few days, which we're going to jump into. There's still plenty of rumors floating out there, and we'll talk about the transfer window in general. But before we do that, Rob, I want to throw it back over to you because our last This Week in Football, which was a couple weeks ago, we did a super draft with Jim Hart from These Football Times and from Nima Tavale from SemperInterDark.com, where we did a live draft of the best players in the world. We simulated the tournament. And we have a result. We have a champion of the first This Week in Football Super Draft. So, Rob, do you want to give us 2 seconds about what happened?
Yeah, sure. I guess we could start off with the respective standings.
Okay.
We did a Champions League style group, which all four of us played against each other home and away. And how it ended was top was Joe's team of Chicago with 12 points, 3 wins, 3 draws. Toronto with Nima had 9 points with 2 wins, 3 draws, and a loss. Sporting KC and NYSCFC, both by Jim and myself, respectively, with 4 points, no wins, 4 draws, and 2 losses. But Jim's side had a 2-goal differential advantage. So, how it standed in the semifinals. It was me against you, Joe. So, it was NYCFC against Chicago. The first leg ended 4-1 for me.
I'd like a rematch.
Goals from Ronaldo and a hat trick from Lewandowski with Aubameyang with your only lone scorer. The second leg ended 2-2, so that's all my team to the final. This other leg saw Jim and Nima take on each other in a really close match. Nima's team ended up winning 3-1 on aggregate. Goals from Alaba, Ibra, James, and Hazard. The third place match goes to you, Joe. You won 1-0 against Jim's team, courtesy of a goal from Toni Kroos. And for the final, it was scoreless after 120 minutes, but Nima's team won 5-4 on penalties. My player, Gareth Bale, missed his shot. And, yeah, Nima is the champion of our Super Draft.
So congratulations to the great Nima Tavale for winning the first tournament. You know, I thought for sure Nima was going to finish in fourth place when he drafted Manuel Neuer with his first pick, the first pick overall in the draft, but I guess Nima knew better than us, man. You know, maybe.
Oh, he said he was a conservative in the sport, so that must be something.
That's right. I think, I think maybe Inter want to look at him for the front office jumping into the transfer window season here. You know.
Definitely.
He did one heck of a job. So, let's get to it. I know we have a bunch of rumors that we wanted to talk about, and we have a bunch of completed transfers, especially the flurry of activity that was this week. So, let's jump into the done deals. And the first one that came across the wire yesterday, which I think, you know, took me a little bit by surprise. I don't know if it took everyone else by surprise. And that was the James Rodriguez deal to Bayern Munich. Correct me if I'm wrong on the numbers, gentlemen, but it is a 2-year loan deal at 6 million euros per season with an option to buy, I think, at the end at 32 million euros. Those are the numbers that are sticking in my brain. And I could be.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, so, and obviously, you know, it goes hand in hand for me with the Douglas Costa move because the Costa move happened, roughly about an hour and a half after the Hamas move.
Yep.
And that was Costa going to Juventus from Bayern for roughly a similar amount of money. You know, I don't have the exact numbers. I think it was $4 million per on the loan, and then a $40 million clause on that one. But I think the top brass at Bayern looked at this one and thought to themselves, you know what? Now that we have brought Hummus in, we now have the ability to move Douglas Costa on without any fear. They do have a little bit of a logjam at the top of the of their formation there, with five attacking players and only three spots to play him in. So I know that's a question I want to ask you guys. And in fact, let's open with that. You know, we've got, now that we've added Hummus to the mix, we've got Hummus Rodriguez, we've got Robert Lewandowski, Thomas Müller, Frank Ribery, and Aaron Robin as kind of their five attacking players in a 4-3-3 formation that Ancelotti likes to use. So who's your starting three? Alex, Harry, I'm going to go to you first. I want to ask your opinion of that. Who starts for you first in that top three? Because we're going to bench two pretty good players in this one.
I think it's interesting that they shipped out Douglas Costa, who's obviously a predominantly wide player, and then brought in Hummus, who is best suited to the center of the pitch. Mm-hmm. And playing three up front, it obviously, I think you have to go with Lewandowski. And then I think it's almost impossible to leave out Arjen Robben. So that leaves one spot. Mm. And it's between Hummus, Frank Ribery, and Thomas Müller. And I personally would probably just push Hummus out to the right, even though it's not his natural position. But I think he's the most talented player out of the three remaining. Mm-hmm. And I don't really see how you can leave him out of the squad.
I agree with you 100%, you know, given the last three players that we have as options there. But Rob, I want to go to you and ask you, with the addition of Hummus, like Harry just pointed out, is more of a central player versus where Douglas Costa would play on the wing. Does this signal maybe the potential shift in a potential shift in formation for Ancelotti, maybe to play a different style, maybe to play a 4-3-1-2, something like that, where he can get Hummus playing in that reserved role behind two strikers, like let's say Lewandowski and somebody else, and then maybe that leaves Arjen Robben out. So do you think he changes formation?
I would not be surprised if he does, because I think that with the addition of Hummus Rodriguez, you know, who was a player that Carlo Ancelotti used a lot at Real Madrid. He played him various times during his the one season together. He was obviously, like you mentioned, he was played on the center. But, I mean, you're dealing with, like Harry said, I mean, you're dealing with two potential great wingers in Arjen Robben. I think the Frank Ribery situation is going to be a bit different. I think considering his age, he's roughly 34 years old, so he's not exactly been as good as he was back then, but he's still a wonderful player. You might want to consider maybe Frank Ribery will be that player being benched if Ancelotti sticks with the same formation of three midfielders and one lone striker. Maybe you see Thomas Müller being shifted to the left. You know, he could play as a striker, could play as a I think he's one of those versatile players that could play on any side of the on the attack, either on the wing or in the center or even as a center forward. So I think you can get that with Thomas Müller, but I don't think you can get that too much with Hummus. I think his preferred position would be playing center attacking mid. But I think we're just gonna have to see if Ancelotti will shift his formation. I mean, with the addition of other players such as Quartin Tolisso from Lyon, I mean, we're gonna have to see, and Sebastian Rudy among other players, we're gonna have to see what type of rotation Bayern's gonna have under Ancelotti. You know, how many of these midfielders will play during certain games and whatnot. So it's going to be interesting to see, but I would probably stick to that same formation and probably put Ribery on the bench and move Müller to the left. But if that's not going to be the case, then yeah, I think we definitely see a formation change.
And you bring up an interesting point, because they did go out and bring in Tolisso from Lyon, you know, much earlier in this transfer window. Do you gentlemen think that's a little bit more of cover, given that they're going to be playing obviously in the Pokal, they're going to be playing, you know, Bundesliga matches, they're going to be in Champions League, and I think there's been a little bit of a disappointment in Bayern over the past couple of years in terms of their Champions League performances. So you could see a guy like Quartin Tolisso feature a little more frequently, let's say in Bundesliga play, or let's say when they're playing for the League Cup. But when it comes time for those nitty-gritty games, you know, the Dortmund game, when it comes time for the Champions League matches, that's when we will see, you know, that top formation of Hamas and Lewandowski and Robin, and maybe he sneaks in Mueller and moves him over to the left or that sort of thing. But really goes with it what he feels is his absolutely strongest team. And Tolisso, although it was a fantastic move and a young player, I believe he's 22, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
You know, is somebody that will gain plenty of experience, but at the same time will be able to feature in some of those matches that will give rest to the other players and make them even a stronger side.
You know. I think it's an embarrassment of riches for Bayern Munich. I think what they lacked in depth clearly has been paid off in this transfer window. I think with the availability to rotate various players during certain matches in different competitions like the Pokal, Bundesliga, and the Champions League will allow them to use them properly well. I mean, these are good replacements. When you're talking about your bench being, you know, James Rodriguez, Kingsley Coman, Colin Tolisso, Renato Sanchez if he stays on, Sebastian Rudy, among other players. So it's something that, even Thiago is to an extent. I mean, this is something that Bayern definitely needed, and I think it will definitely help them this season.
Harry, so just looking back, and this is kind of put a bow on this Hamas move. You know, what with Bayern making this move, obviously they've done quite a few things, and I think they've done it smartly with the whole loan deal. They kind of get to spread that money out a little bit. What do you feel is next for Bayern in terms of where they finish? I mean, I think even without the Hamas move, I think many people expected them to finish tops in the Bundesliga again. And so I think the focus for them is Champions League here. What kind of squad do you feel like they have to compete in Champions League? Do they get to the semifinals? Do they get to the finals this year and return to that spot where they were, I believe it was 4 years ago? Or is this another quarterfinal, exit from the tournament?
Well, last year I was actually very high on Bayern Munich, and I picked them to win the Champions League, and obviously it didn't turn out that way. But I could easily see them in the final this coming season. They've got the talent in the squad. They've now got the depth, and they've got one of the best managers in the world. It's just about putting that plan into action and being successful. But I think an interesting point is Rob mentioned Thiago, and from what I've watched of Bayern, I like to think that Bayern have sort of built their team around Thiago, mm-hmm. and now. Do you build it around Thiago, or do you lean in the favor of Hamas and build around Hamas? Because he was extremely productive under Ancelotti at Real Madrid. I have the Opta stats here. He was involved in 34 goals in 46 games under Ancelotti. So I think if no matter which way they go, whether it's through Thiago or whether it's through Hamas, I would definitely put them as one of the top three candidates to win the Champions League. It would just be interesting to see how they go about challenging for that title.
Okay. Let's shift the focus now to another a couple more transfers, a couple of different ones that are confirmed. I guess let's call this the Juventus corner because there's been a little bit of movement at the Turin side. Let's look at the first one, Dani Alves, because this one, I mean, intrigues me to no end. The rumors at the beginning of the week, Monday, Sunday, even Saturday, was that Dani Alves was moving to Manchester City. He was going to be reunited with Pep Guardiola. Seemed like a done deal. The words imminent have been used, all that kind of stuff. And then yesterday morning, it broke that he was not going there, that PSG had swooped in and literally doubled his salary for what Manchester City was going to give him, and now he's going to be playing at the Parc for the 2017-2018 season. Rob, you know, many people felt that this was a snub of Pep Guardiola, but do you feel it's as much of a snub or maybe a a possible situation where the two of them aren't as buddy-buddy as many may have assumed? Or you think it's just strictly the money where all of a sudden instead of being offered $10 an hour, they got offered $20 an hour and you're like, well, you know, because this is a guy that doesn't necessarily need the money. But you look back at his history and his life, coming from such poor surroundings, you know, and really someone who earned his way, maybe it is the case there. He looked at the dollar signs. You know what? I need to make the most I can for my family right now because I never want to go back to being poor again. So, you know, Rob, what are your thoughts on you know, the decision? Was it something with Pep or was it something with cash?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned about Dani Alves. I mean, this is a player who's been, I guess, charismatic all his career. I mean, you can go by whatever he says in press conferences, from his clothing to anything like that. I mean, Dani Alves is one of the coolest and charismatic players in this sport. I don't think the money thing would be an issue. I mean, considering of all the clubs that he's played for, Sevilla, Barcelona, Juventus, he's won titles there. He's one of the most successful players to win various titles. I don't think he needs any more money in his career. You know, in today's press conference I was watching, he said, if Pep Guardiola mentions City feel hurt, I'm sorry, I'm come here to be a champion. And I have no doubt into saying why he should come here. I mean, you know, it's going to be one of the hardest Premier Leagues to decide this season. And you know, despite Monaco, you know, breaking that stranglehold that PSG had for various years, you know, they're still going to be one of the favorites to actually win Ligue 1. So I think this just adds depth for Unai Emery's men. I also see it as something to prepare himself for the World Cup happening next year. I feel that maybe, you know, not playing too much under Guardiola, or maybe something that goes terribly wrong for him in which he misses the World Cup due to an injury or something like that. I think he's playing the safe bet here to stay in France. But, you know, I think the money issue isn't going to be a problem. I mean, he has a lot of money in itself. I mean, PSG have the significant advantage over Manchester City in terms of a transfer budget. But, no, I don't see any love lost between him and Pep Guardiola. I just think of seeing him as just showing the world, and I guess showing himself what he has the capacity of doing at a club like PSG.
Right, right. You know, and Harry, I'm going to ask you this one. Where does this put PSG? Obviously, he's going to replace Serge Aurier, and rightfully so. I mean, when you look at the two, granted, Serge Aurier is much younger, but you know, in terms of the experience, and we saw it in the Champions League semifinals, the amount of experience that Dani Alves brings to the pitch is second to none. And what does this mean for PSG's chances in the Champions League? Do they finally get over that quarterfinal hump and move on much deeper?
I think it, as you said, he brings a ton of experience, and I think that's what PSG have lacked in recent years is that player that knows how to win the Champions League. He's gone all the way numerous times. He's been to finals, and I think he brings a lot to the locker room. But it's a strange one, because if I remember correctly, Dani Alves wasn't his best at the beginning of last season.
Correct.
But as the Champions League kicked up back again in around February, he looked like the Dani Alves of old. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's what they use him for. Maybe that's they bring him in and play him in mainly Champions League, and switch him out and rotate him in Ligue 1, and just use his experience in the Champions League to propel them past that dreaded quarterfinal stage.
Well, let's look at it from that perspective then, because I think that's a great point. From that perspective, obviously they would still need Serge Aurier to stick around. Now you've got two, you know, for lack of a better term, you've got two world-class right backs playing for you in Aurier and Dani Alves. Does this sour Serge Aurier where he does move, and potentially there were rumors floating around that he would be the replacement for Dani Alves at Juventus? Does he move on, or does he stick around and they kind of do a job share kind of thing?
Well, I think he's been linked away he's been linked with a move away for the last two seasons, I think.
Okay.
This summer and last summer. And I mean, personally, I think it would be best for his career to move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just because he's had off-field issues and Paris hasn't exactly been the best move for him so far.
Right.
But who's to say he doesn't learn under Dani Alves and become the right back that PSG thought he would be and becomes their mainstay at that position for years to come.
Right. Now, Rob, if he does move away, because I think I would side with Harry and say that he would be best served to stay and understudy under Dani Alves and see what it means to be that caliber of footballer. But let's say he does move on, you know, aside from Juventus, which I know has been a pretty popular link, where else would you see a guy like Serge Aurier possibly move?
Well, we could talk about the club that that Dani Alves snubbed, and you just mentioned in Manchester City. You know, they desperately need a right back after they got rid of Bakary Sagna and other players. So that's definitely a club that that would best suit Serge Aurier. And I think, given his age as well, at 24, I think it's the perfect age for someone like Guardiola to coach over various seasons, not like a 2 or 3 year deal or something like that. This could be someone that could play for the team for various seasons. So that's definitely a club that that comes out of mind when they need someone like him.
I would agree. I was actually thinking, you know, I'm glad you narrowed it down to Manchester City, but I was thinking someplace in England as well might suit him. If it's not Juventus, somewhere in England I think might suit Serge Aurier very, very well. In terms of advancing his career, but City does make a lot of sense because, like you said, there's an opening there, and certainly they're going to have the money to spend on a world-class right back, so I think Serge Aurier might not be a bad fit there for sure. Let's look at the other side of the Juventus coin, and that was Douglas Costa. I know we talked about him 2 seconds ago with James Rodriguez moving to Bayern made Douglas Costa, quote-unquote, expendable. But he does come into this side. He kind of plays on the right side where Juan Cuadrado plays. Juan Cuadrado obviously signing in this offseason with Juventus for, I want to say it was 3 years, but I'm not 100% positive. But I do know it was a couple of years that he signed on the contract as a transfer over from Chelsea. So, you know, Harry, I'm going to ask you first, Douglas Costa or Juan Cuadrado, if you're Max Allegri, who do you think you start first in this between the two?
I would say Douglas Costa is the more talented player. Mm. But I think you have to take into account Juan Cuadrado's ability to get back and defend. And he showed that numerous times for Juventus last year. Mm-hmm. But my gut would be to go with Douglas Costa. I just think he's the better player overall. He's more dynamic. He's more direct. And I think he's got a better eye for goal than Juan Cuadrado.
I agree. Also, I think I think the partnership that Juan Cuadrado flourished under last season was actually the Dani Alves partnership. And now that Dani Alves is gone, I think... you know, Cuadrado is a heck of a player, and I don't think he's going anywhere. But I do think Douglas Costa is the better player to start. One thing that we've talked about here on the show previously is the fact that it looked like in the Champions League final, Juventus just ran out of gas. You know, just flat out ran out of gas, especially in that second half of that Champions League final, allowed Real Madrid to really take advantage. And at that point, the Juve side had no answers. This adds a little youth. For me, it adds a little quality youth, especially in attacking. And I think that this is a great move for them overall. You know, without dabbling in, but I want to kind of get away from Juventus here. But I do want to throw in a rumor here. I've seen people talking about the potential of Steven Zonzi coming over from Sevilla, who would really take that Sami Khedira spot. That's a spot where they've really looked old. Where Khedira, who was injured quite frequently towards the end of the season, Claudio Marchisio's definitely got some wear and tear on those tires, so he's not going to withstand, you know, going through another heavy season like that. But a guy like Steven Zonzi is an incredible player, one of the top pieces at Sevilla, and now with the addition of Ever Banega going back to Sevilla, might make him not necessarily expendable but affordable. So, Rob, you know, would that be the next best move for Juve to possibly add Steven Zonzi, or you think they should maybe look elsewhere, maybe look at that right back position a little closer?
No, I think you hit it right on the head. I think a player like Steven Nzolzi would fit well into a, like you said, I guess, into a center defensive midfield side that, you know, isn't exactly, you know, dependable for an amount of, for a 38-game season and more matches in the Champions League and the Coppa Italia. You mentioned, you know, players like Samir Khedira, you know, getting injured, Claudio Machidi as well. So having a player like Steven Nzolzi, who was very versatile, and he showed that under Sampaoli with Sevilla, I think, you know, kind of adds more of that depth that that Juventus didn't have properly on that Champions League final. And I think just having, you know, the addition, going back to Douglas Costa, I think just adding that depth of two wonderful players who are versatile and are able to go back or to go forward onto the attack, it just brings something that I think Allegri was missing for quite a while.
Absolutely. You know, Harry, is the right back position going to become that much more in focus for Juventus, or do you think they should just look to backfill the team, get themselves a little younger, and still with this core of players that they have, make that Champions League run again?
I think there are right back options out there that they can pursue, but I think just building the depth and building from midfield, I think that was their weaker point in that Champions League final. It just seemed to get overrun. And like you said, I think Nzonzi would be a good fit. I've not heard any rumors about it, but I think another good fit would be someone like Nemanja Matic, a big body that can shield the back three or whatever it is. And just going a bit younger than Sami Khedira. I think they've got plenty of talent to make another run at the Champions League. They just need to refuel and get stronger depth-wise.
Agreed. Let's move on to some of the other transfers. And these next ones, I guess, in terms of done deals, this will be the second to last topic for the done deals that I want to talk to. I want to talk about them together because they've moved. They moved within the same time frame, and it really, for me, points to the fact that I think a lot of teams this year are going to overspend on strikers. And that is the transfer of Romelu Lukaku from Everton to Manchester United. And I have the money here real quick. He moved for 84.7 million euros. And apparently with incentives could become the biggest transfer ever to beat Paul Pogba's record, which was set last year. You know, that's one striker that moved over the past few days. The other one is Alexander Lacazette. Moving on from Lyon to Arsenal, who'd have thought Arsene Wenger would have spent a few bucks? but talk about picking up a quality striker, you know, French national team player, second, I believe, in scoring in Ligue 1 last year behind Edson Cavani. But I believe, if I remember correctly, the fee for him, and I don't have it handy, was about 15 million euro less than Lukaku. So, Harry, I'm going to go to you first. Who did the better business here? Was it Manchester United going all the way with that amount of money to get Lukaku? Was it Lacazette, you know, coming in for a little less money? Or did they both mess up and there was somebody out there that was better to be had for the same amount of money?
I think both teams have done good business. They both brought in quality strikers. And I think Lukaku, you're getting a player that's obviously proven himself to be phenomenal in the Premier League. Mm-hmm. And he's only 24 years old. And he's on course to go down as one of the best goal scorers in Premier League history if he keeps it up. But I prefer the business that Arsenal did. And you won't hear me praise Arsenal too often, but I just think getting in Lacazette and in today's market, it's a fairly cheap price for a striker compared to Lukaku and what Morata's been rumored to go for. He fits Arsenal perfectly, and they finally replaced Robin van Persie after 5 years. Mm-hmm. I think it's a perfect fit, and while Lukaku will probably do a phenomenal job for Man United, I just think Lacazette is the perfect fit, and he's a very, very good signing.
You know, just looking at his numbers here, in 186 matches played in the Premier League, He scored 85 goals. So certainly a phenomenal record. I think over the past 3 years, he is the third highest goal scorer in the entire league. I saw a stat on that. I think it was actually Harry Kane who was tops. He may have been either second or third in the league in scoring over the past few seasons. So, you know, he is absolutely a fantastic striker. Certainly, like you said, have proven it. And that was, you know, one discussion that I had with our friend Mike Orr, where, you know, I felt that Lacazette was the better deal just because he's such a quality striker and came on for so much less money. But then Mike had pointed out, you know, he's proven that he can do it and has done it in the EPL. So probably, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I would say that, and this is my opinion, not his, but I would say that the moves are similar. You know, you got Lacazette at a little bit of a discount, but you got Lacazette who is unproven. Where you got Lukaku, which cost you more money, but he's certainly proven as a goal scorer. Rob, throwing him in this Manchester United lineup, who feeds him the ball? He's certainly a player that needs to be fed the ball. And we've seen that plenty of times at Everton. Who feeds him?
Well, I think it's going to be one of his friends that are going to feed. That's going to feed him, and it's going to be probably the man that he surpasses in that record. It's going to be Paul Pogba. Yeah. I think his second season with Manchester United will be much more different than his first. I think now with him being more used to what Mourinho is trying to make, I think that he's definitely going to be one of the versatile players to help him feed the ball. I mean, and another one like Juan Mata as well. You know, he's proven, I think, consistently season after season that he's one of the best midfielders in the Premier League. And I think that's someone just as versatile and, you know, can play the ball properly well to the attack is perfect for a deadly poacher to score like Romelu Lukaku. So it's definitely going to have to be one of those two feeding the ball, or even Hander Herrera as well, just to make a little mention to him, you know, another quality versatile player that could go back and go forward as well. And I think that's going to be very, it's really going to be something that we're going to have to see heading into next season, how this Manchester United side will cope, you know, without the influence of Zlatan Ibrahimovic, at striker.
Right. I agree. One last question for you, Harry, you know, and rounding out these last two strikers, I'm going to incorporate one of the rumors here that we had previously discussed. And that is obviously with Lacazette coming onto Arsenal and playing in that striker position, you know, you look at Alexis Sanchez and what's going on, what's happened to him over the past year. He's been linked to go to Bayern Munich. He's been linked to Manchester City. He's been linked to pretty much anybody with a deep pocket that wants a prolific player. I noticed when I watched Arsenal this year that Sanchez was at his best when he was not played up top in the formation in that striker role, but more of a left winger type player where he was able to maraud up and down the left side of the pitch and wreaking havoc on defensive backs and then being able to cut in and score, almost like a mirror image of Aaron Robin sometimes. Do Arsenal look to move him quickly, or do they try to make this thing work between Lacazette and Sanchez and give them kind of a second dimension of being able to attack, especially with a guy like Mesut Ozil behind them and setting them up?
I think they have to try to fit him into the squad. Mm-hmm. Losing out on a player that scored, I think it was 21 goals last year in the Premier League, and that's not even from the striker position 24/7. He played on the wing. He played a little bit in the number 10 role. He was all over the place, and contributing that much, I think it'd be a huge mistake for Arsenal to let him go. That being said, they are rumored to be interested in a couple of wingers, but I can't see another winger out there that's more prolific and more complete and more experienced than Alexis Sanchez. I think you have to see how a front three or a front four works of Sanchez and Mesut Ozil and Lacazette and whoever else you want to throw in there. I think for Arsenal, the signing of Lacazette and keeping the out of contract Ozil and Sanchez, I think this is the year that they genuinely could have a run at the Premier League title. Mm-hmm. But it's all about keeping together that front three.
That was going to be my next question to you: is do you see them making a run to that title with this side, or because I've got to imagine Arsene Wenger's probably got a little wallet shock after spending the money on Lacazette. He doesn't seem like the type of person, or at least the Arsenal front office doesn't seem like the type of people that want to go and throw money around. And there was a significant amount of money thrown around here, so I've got to think that for Arsenal to be successful, they have to get back into that top four without a doubt. And I think within mid-April, still need to be in the discussion for the title. Maybe even pull something like an FA Cup or something like that, and bring some type of hardware home.
Or the Europa League as well.
Or the Europa League as well, true, because they'll be there as well. But to bring some hardware back, after spending the money, I don't see them not. I don't see that not being an option. And we'll have to see. Or else you can imagine how people will start calling for Arsene Wenger's head, sometime in mid-December if they're not challenging for any titles, right?
Absolutely.
As customary as it is for the last few seasons.
So let's do one more batch of confirmed transfers, and let's look at the work that AC Milan has done so far in this transfer window. They have spent so far almost 111 million pounds in this transfer window confirmed. Andre Silva coming over from FC Porto for 32 million pounds. Andrea Conti coming from Atalanta for 21 million pounds. Hakan Çalhanoğlu coming over from Bayer Leverkusen for almost 19 million pounds. Matteo Musacchio coming over from Villarreal, which is a great move, for 15 million. Ricardo Rodriguez is one of those wingbacks we talked about, coming over from Wolfsburg for 15 million as well. Then they picked up Franchesi from Atalanta. They've really stripped Atalanta down a little bit, which is disappointing, seeing that they got into the Europa League this year. They also picked up Fabio Borini on loan from Sunderland. And obviously the biggest move of them all, Antonio Donnarumma coming over from Asteris Tripoli for 1.2 million pounds. Clearly, that was the bookie's vig they had to pay to sign little brother Gigio Donnarumma to a 5-year contract. They've also done a little bit of house cleaning, but not a ton. They got rid of Katsuki Honda, who's a free agent. Andrea Poli sent him over to Bologna on a free. And Kuchka went over to Trabzonspor for 4 million pounds. But there was a period of time where AC Milan was moving a player, or they were making a move every 5 days in this transfer window. They have been one of the most active teams, and I think for me, and I've said this to a few people, it's the stability. They've got the stability of the Chinese money. Galliani's not there anymore. Berlusconi's not there anymore. They've got this influx of cash, and they want to return AC Milan to those Paolo Maldini, Franco Baresi days where they were European dominant. They bring on a guy, Luciano Spalletti, who comes over as a coach over from Roma, and certainly is going to. I'm sorry, wrong team, wrong Milan team. But they've done a lot of work in this off season. So Rob, I'm going to go to you first. What are your thoughts on what Milan has done so far, and is this going to be enough to crack that top three nut with Napoli, Roma, and Juventus at the top?
Well, I think it's definitely sending a bit of terror, I guess, to Juventus, to Roma, to Napoli, even to their bitter rivals, who also can compete for the title if they get the right players. But no, I think they're demonstrating, like you said, the new Chinese owner had a goal in mind to return the great Milan that was dominant in the 90s and in the 2000s. As well, so this is definitely a right step. Despite only going to the Europa League, I mean, they're still in contention for Serie A. They could definitely go in for a Coppa Italia as well. I mean, this is a team that could definitely win some silverware at the end of this next season. I mean, and rightly so. I mean, they added a lot of depth. I think they added the right players that they needed on this Milan side. Mustachio, Rodriguez, quality defenders that demonstrated that for Wolfsburg and Villarreal. Andre Silva, he's been demonstrating it for Porto and for Portugal, as we've seen in recent games. You know, it could be one of those strikers that Milan can have for various years. You know, I think that he's going to be one of those dominant strikers that could definitely tear Serie A apart. And then what can you say about Çalhanoğlu? I mean, he's definitely all right. He didn't have the best end to his Bayer Leverkusen days, but, you know, he's wonderful in the midfield. He could definitely score great free kicks, as we've seen in highlights or anything on YouTube or anything like, or even seen Bayer Leverkusen play. You know, we know what he's capable of doing. And they're spending right. They haven't spent too much. I mean, like you said, their most expensive player was Andre Silva from Porto for $38 million. And rightly so, looking into the future. But I think this is a step in the right direction for Milan. I think it's giving a bit more excitement to this Milan side that we haven't seen in recent years. I think what will happen in the first few months of Serie A will determine how good their depth could be moving forward. It's going to be interesting. I'm very interested in to see this Milan side moving forward.
Now, just to flip the tables a little bit, we look at the other side of the San Siro. We look at the at Inter Milan, who's another team that was stabilized with Chinese ownership during this season. Not as prolific with their movement. They have brought on, they brought on Spalletti, where I misspoke earlier. Really, the biggest move for them is probably in the midfield, with Borja Valero moving in from Fiorentina for £9 million. I'm sorry, 9 million euro. 5.5 million euro. They did bring on Milan Skriniar from Sampdoria, the center back, for 23 million euro. I think that's another position people are going to overspend on this year, but. I'm surprised, and Harry, I want to ask your opinion. I'm surprised we haven't seen as much movement out of this Inter Milan side. We've seen Banega move out and move on as well, but not much moving on, not much going on here at Inter. Do you see them maybe picking up somebody coming up soon?
There's been links all over, and I mentioned earlier the possibility of Matic going to Juventus. I've seen, I believe it was the Gazzetta, Matic was linked into Milan. I think that'd be a quality signing for them. He'd stabilize the midfield. But it's been very quiet. A very, very quiet window for them so far, especially compared to their neighbors. And you have to think as Spalletti or as an Inter Milan fan that a bit of jealousy towards AC Milan.
Sure, you'd almost would expect a little bit more of a quote unquote arms race, where your noisy neighbors, for lack of a better term, are making so much noise in the transfer market. You almost feel that you need to spend some money, but it just seems like it's not, the fervor's not there. But at least you scratch the surface with a guy like Valero coming on. I do see the rumors about. Nemanja Matic. Another one, though, is the moves they're not making. And there's been rumor of Ivan Perisic moving on from Inter to, I believe, Manchester United. But it seems like Inter won't budge on their price. So is this a situation where Inter don't have to move somebody and they'd like to hold on that piece? I mean, granted, Perisic was one of their top performers last year. But is this are they going to hang on to him?
I think it's all going to depend on what Manchester United wants, or I guess what Inter want from Manchester United. Personally, I would love to see him play one more season for Inter Milan, especially ever since Ever Banega lost. You know, you want to create more of that depth and creativity for Inter. Granted, we have to see who they're going to get in the next few weeks, but I think the wise choice would definitely want to... would be to keep Perisic for another season.
Last rumor of the Milan sides, and I'm looking at this right now. You guys might not have even heard this one, but this came up. Actually, this came up today, and it's going to be on the front page of Tutto Sports newspaper. It looks like both Milan sides are after one Leonardo Bonucci. And this is one I haven't heard of. Do either of you guys see Leo Bonucci moving from an Italian side to an Italian side, and especially going from Juventus to any of the Milan clubs? you know, in one word, Rob, you first.
Well, no.
No.
Obviously not. Well, yeah. Despite, you know, playing, he's a product of the Academy of Inter. You know, he played there when he was 18. He didn't get too many playing time over there. At Inter, you know, that was when the dominant Inter side were dominating in Italy and Europe. So, no, I think he's grown a bond to this Juventus side for the many years that he's there, that it would be ridiculous and, I guess, to the point of being a traitor for him to leave a side where he's built his, I guess, his own legend at Juventus.
Right, yeah. And Harry, how about you? Same answer?
I'll play a little bit of devil's advocate here, and I can't see him leaving, but if he were to go, I would say that it would be Inter Milan. And he's not too old, he's 30 years old, but Juventus, they've got plenty of depth at centre-back. They brought in Benicia, and they obviously have Barzagli and Chiellini there still. So I don't think they're going to let him go, but it would be fun to see that kind of switch to see him go back to Inter Milan and that Inter Juventus rivalry immediately heat right back up just because of one transfer.
Yeah, that would certainly be one heck of a spark. I think that would really heat up that matchup once again. So let's look at some rumors now quickly, and I guess I want to start with the striker situation at Chelsea. You know, obviously it's come out in the recent days that Diego Costa and Antonio Conte are truly on the outs, where that door, it seems, has been shut and bolted for Costa to get to his locker, and we don't think he will be returning at all. Chelsea's also been linked with Alvaro Morata from Real Madrid, Andrea Belotti over at Torino, which would cost an incredible amount of money. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang would be another option. Aubameyang's been linked also to AC Milan. So let's look at those three strikers to start, in Morata, Belotti, and Aubameyang. Knowing that Diego Costa is pretty much not there, I don't think Antonio Conte is completely in love with the idea of Michy Batshuayi as his striker to start the season. So, you know, rating all three rumors, first, second, and third, as to what's most likely to happen. Harry, obviously, in your Twitter handle, you have the letter CFC, and I'm pretty sure I know why. So I'd like your opinion on this first, because this one's going to hit very close to you. Which of these three strikers would you want? Which one best fits? Or did Chelsea miss their chance and should have gotten Lukaku anyway?
I think we did miss a very good chance in Lukaku. But in terms of best fit, I would say Belotti would be the perfect fit. An Italian striker under an Italian coach. He was phenomenal last year for Torino. He's got all the attributes. He's been likened to Suarez in some aspects, and he would probably be my number one choice. I think he'd be a brilliant fit for Chelsea. I would say Aubameyang would be my second choice. He's quick, he's experienced. I think he was the top goal scorer in Bundesliga last year.
Yep, tied with Robert Lewandowski.
Yeah, so he's got bags of potential, or bags of ability, excuse me. The only downside would be his age. He's a lot older than Belotti and Morata, which brings me to Alvaro Morata. I'm not exactly keen on the Spanish striker. Obviously, he struggled for game time with Real Madrid, but when he made his appearances, he performed and he scored. He's obviously got a fantastic Champions League record. It's just the doubt of whether he can do it week in, week out as the number one guy. That leaves me saying he would be my third choice. But I think Belotti and Aubameyang, I would absolutely fall in love with either of them at Chelsea. I'm just a bit skeptical with Morata.
Sure, and I mean, you know, when we ask this question, we're looking at three top-class strikers here. I don't think anyone would be disappointed in either of these three strikers. Rob, you know, obviously we heard Harry's analysis. I'd like yours in terms of ranking these top three as to where you think they should go for Chelsea.
Well, I'm going to have to agree with Harry here and say that, yeah, you kind of have a significant disadvantage on Aubameyang. You know, he, like you said, he's 30 years old or somewhere on those lines. I'm not too sure. But I think he has definitely the much more experience and has faced tougher opposition as he had in the Champions League and even in the Bundesliga, being the top goal scorer last season. So you if you put someone like him up front, you're definitely going to get a lot of goals. He's a real poacher. I think he's demonstrated that for Borussia Dortmund. I think that he would be a quality fit for Chelsea. Although I would definitely would rate him, I would say, probably second as well. I think I'm going to have to agree with Harry here and say I put Belotti on top as my as the right choice for what Chelsea can get. I think I think he's better because I think he's more of a physical annihilator. I think we've seen that what he's done with Torino. You know, he's when he lighted up all of Serie A. With Morata, you do get the experience, although not too much experience. And he has shined the times he's played, but you know, what do you do when you're a striker playing consistently for various matches? You know, that hasn't been seen for quite a while, Morata. So you kind of worry about, you know, what he'll be able to do up front. So it's like you said, Joe and Harry, it's a win-win for Chelsea to get any of these three strikers. But I think if you want like the true number nine to get you goals and to really help you out, you know, to help out players like Hazard, William, and Pedro, you're going to have to side with Belotti in this one.
Yeah, you know, I agree with both of you as well. I think the only prohibited factor here is going to be the money. Although, you know, when you're talking about a top English side that's going to Champions League, money is not as no object. But you think of that 100 million euro clause that Belotti has in his contract to get him out of it. And then you look at somebody like Morata, who's on the same, around the same age, roughly. Aubameyang's 28 years old. He turned 28 in June. So he is significantly older than both strikers, both the other two choices. I just think Morata can be had for a little less money. And again, like you guys both said, can he do it week in and week out? Because everywhere he's gone, he's been able to perform, whether it be at Real Madrid or Juventus, he's been able to score goals, but he's never in the lineup consistently. You know, you're playing behind Karim Benzema, you know, you're playing behind Carlos Tevez and a couple of the other strikers that have been through the Juventus side, and it's tough to break through. So, you know, I think part of that is the fact that he's so young, we seem to forget that, where Belotti is, you know, on a team that is, you know, considered to be less talented, so he would be a better option. I think all three of them would be successful. I think we might be selling Aubameyang short, because Aubameyang, for me, is sort of more in the mold of a Robert Lewandowski, where he can hold up play and then score. He can be physical, but he can also create for himself, where I think sometimes a guy like Lukaku, you lose that creativity a little bit. I think Belotti is Harry, like you said, in the mold of Luis Suarez. I think that is the perfect analogy. Even the way he runs and he dices through defenses, I think is the perfect analysis. Where Morata, for me, is a little bit more of the Lukaku mold, because he's a big body and is able to get up and play in the air. And we've seen it in a couple places. So I think, you know, they all bring something a little different to the table. I think Aubameyang is probably the more complete striker. I think Belotti is going to have the most potential of the three, but I think Morata would be a good value for the money moving forward. So let's talk about one more striker here. I know we want to wrap this up pretty soon, but let's talk about one more striker and somebody that's going to go for a ridiculous amount of money. And that is 18-year-old Kylian Mbappe. Even though Monaco has come out and said, you know, they weren't going to move nearly the amount of players that you previously thought they were going to, because they didn't need to with the money they made winning the Ligue 1, you know, with the run they had in the Champions League. They'd made plenty of money this year. They had already moved on Bernardo Silva. You know, there's rumors of Bakayoko going to Chelsea. We'll have to see if those materialize or not, but Mbappe is the one player that Monaco has said, we will not sell. Yet at the same time, he's currently linked with Real Madrid. He's linked with PSG, where PSG may be moving. You know, the Hamas move, many have said the Hamas move has been in an effort to free up money to bring Kylian Mbappe in this year. So, you know, Rob, I'm going to go to you first. The thought of Mbappe moving, is it going to happen?
I don't think it should happen. I don't think it will happen either way. We did see a lot of news recently about how, you know, Zinedine Zidane wanted to sign this player for Real Madrid for a ridiculous amount of money, and that he promised him that he would get significant playing time. You know, and I feel that that's kind of ridiculous in the sense that, you know, we're looking at him playing second fiddle to another great striker like Karim Benzema. You know, I don't really see that happening. I think it would be logical for him to stay at Monaco. I don't think a team like Arsenal, who already has their striker in Alexandre Lacazette, I don't think it'd be wise to get someone like Kylian Mbappe. I think with PSG, you know, you want to get the best more out of a player like Edson Cavani to be your main striker for various years. And I just think that, you know, this is a kid who, for lack of a better words, is not even at his prime yet. You know, he's just getting started. I think, you know, being 18 years old is going to have a lot of pressure on your shoulders when you're being called the heir apparent of Thierry Henry by various people. So, no, I think it would be wise for him to stay for another season or two at Monaco. I think he should stay there for a couple more years. Maybe after the World Cup, we'll see something, you know, extraordinary if we see this the same Mbappe or the better Mbappe that we saw last season in the Champions League and in Ligue 1 would demonstrate that he could be off his way from Monaco. But I think for now, at least for this new season that's coming up, that yeah, I think it'd be wise for him to stay at Monaco.
I agree. Now Harry, I want to throw it over to you because I, you know, looking at this, obviously the other team on the list here is PSG, who we know have boatloads of money, where they doubled Dani Alves' wage to take him from City. To take any player from an English side, which has, you know, arguably the most, in terms of a league, has the most money of everybody in the world, league-wide, from top to bottom. To be able to pull a coup like that financially is significantly impressive. So for PSG to rule PSG out in the running against somebody like Real Madrid, I think would be foolish on somebody's part. But at the same time, I agree with Rob. Do you agree that he should stay at Monaco at least another year? And what's the likelihood of PSG really spending that kind of money, especially knowing that they've got a wonderful striker in Edson Cavani already there?
I definitely think it'd be the best choice to stick with Monaco for the coming season. He's still, I believe it's 18. He's only a young kid. He broke out last season and now he's the most wanted name in football. And PSG, I don't want to see it become a situation where Bayern Munich and Dortmund and PSG become that sort of, we'll take all of your players when they finally hit their prime. I absolutely would not rule out PSG though. Cavani isn't the youngest striker and he's been prolific since he joined PSG from Napoli, but he's had his struggles at the same time. I think PSG stick with Cavani this year, and if they can't get past that quarterfinal stage in the Champions League, then I think we could see an all-out race for Mbappe's name next season or next summer with PSG and Real Madrid. And I wouldn't be surprised to see teams like Barcelona and other big names thrown in there. I mean, this kid is a superstar already, and everyone wants him.
Sure, absolutely. Now, I have a couple more questions for both of you before we wrap this up tonight. First off, looking at this transfer window, this is the last summer transfer window before the next World Cup. And traditionally, this transfer window is normally a quiet one where we don't see many players moving because they don't want to stir the pot. They would like stability leading into that World Cup year. This year, for some reason, seems different, where we seem to see a lot of names, a lot of big names, and big names that feature on their national teams moving. You know, I'm just looking at the list right now. James Rodriguez features at Colombia. Denny Alves, although hasn't recently, certainly a key back for Brazil. Douglas Costa certainly on that starting Brazilian side. Bernardo Silva, we saw him at the Confederations Cup for Portugal. Lukaku is certainly the striker, the top striker at Belgium. Lacazette, if it's not Benzema, it's usually Lacazette or Olivier Giroud at the French national team, as well as Antoine Griezmann. You know, so there are a lot of big names, even Alexis Sanchez, who we're rumoring here, Alvaro Morata, Andrea Belotti starting for the Italian national team. There are a lot of names here that are prominent figures on their national team's side. Why do we see so many of these moves happening on a year that normally we wouldn't see that? Harry, I'm going to throw that question over to you first.
I think it's just a lot of these names that you just threw out, a lot of them are linked to clubs that are some of the biggest in the world. And for instance, Belotti and Lacazette, I don't think Lacazette is getting the appreciation and praise that he deserves while he's at Lyon. So by throwing him onto Arsenal's side, who are one of the biggest clubs in the world, despite not being in the Champions League this season. An interesting tidbit about Lacazette would be him joining Arsenal now throws Giroud's place in the French national team off. And I think those two strikers would be my two choices of who's battling for that last striker spot for the next World Cup. I think France are blessed with, obviously, an abundance of talent. And Lacazette moving to a bigger club puts him in the spotlight of the French manager. I believe it's still Didier Deschamps.
Yep.
Puts him in the spotlight, and it's him saying, I'm ready to make a statement, I'm ready to push out a teammate. And a lot of these names are trying to put their name in the same window, saying, even though we start for our national teams, it's, I can be the main man, I want everything to go through me, and I'll prove it by going to so-and-so.
That's a great point. Rob, I mean, do you agree, or do you also see something else in this window?
No, I agree with Harry. I think it's definitely a statement from various players to be on that World Cup squad, especially on a team like France where you're dealing with a lot of depth. But when you're looking at a situation where you want to dominate for your club and obviously dominate for a big club, like I said, for Arsenal, you know, that this is going to be sometimes for Didier Deschamps and even other coaches around the world. With a lot of depth, you know, like Chichi for Brazil or Jorge Sampaoli for Argentina, Joaquin Low with Germany, and the list goes on. So it's definitely going to be interesting from here on out to see what these players will demonstrate for these clubs moving forward. I think you're right about how we don't really see these many transfers happen the year before the World Cup. We usually see them after, because I think that during those World Cup tournaments, you want to see breakout players. You know, they break out in that tournament and they leave for a new team just after the World Cup. So, yeah, I think I agree with Harry. It's a statement that they want to make for their managers and for everyone else, and to show that they're capable of demonstrating what they can for a club and even for country in the biggest tournament in the world, like the World Cup.
Do you guys feel that maybe there's also a financial piece here where it seems like there is, you know, this is probably the richest world football has been ever, with all the new TV contracts, with all that sort of stuff. Do you feel that maybe a second component of this is players are taking advantage of the money? We see plenty of players moving to China. Are they taking advantage of the money and cashing in while they can in their careers?
I think that plays a part, but I don't think it's one of the main components of it. Obviously players are going to love money, and with football being the richest it's ever been, why not move clubs and why not increase your wages and double your wages? I think it's an appealing component to a transfer. I don't think it's the main reason why players are putting themselves in the window and asking for moves, but I think it's an interesting aspect to it.
Yeah, Rob, how about you?
Yeah, I agree. I definitely agree.
Yeah. Last question of the night, gentlemen, before we wrap up tonight's show. We've talked about a ton of different transfers. Harry, I'm going to have you go first, if you'd like, because you're our guest. Are there any transfers that we have not discussed, either any transfers or any rumors that we have not discussed that intrigue you that you want to mention here before we sign off?
Obviously, being a Chelsea fan, obviously we're linked to Danilo and Alexandro. It's been a weird couple weeks. Sandro's gone from close to agreeing a deal, and all of a sudden it's gone quiet, and Danilo's name has popped up, and that's close to agreeing a deal. So that's a sticky situation that I'd like more info about. But another interesting one that's been going on all summer that it's kind of quieted down is Benjamin Mendy to Manchester City, with Monaco basically shutting down things after selling Bernardo Silva, and then with Bakayoko looking like he's heading to Chelsea. It looks like they're saying, all right, no more departures. And Mendy's been linked, and he's obviously been teasing things on Instagram, and there's been heavy links, and it just seems like it's gone on forever, and I don't think Manchester City can afford to miss out on Dani Alves and Benjamin Mendy, especially with such a severe need for fullbacks.
Right, I agree. They really need to be hard into the fullback, center back, or wing back market, with all the turnover they had on that back line over this past year. So I completely agree. They need to make a move, and I think sooner than later. Rob, same question to you. Are there any transfers that we have? I mean, like I said, we've discussed a ton of them. Any transfers or any rumors that we haven't discussed before we sign off tonight?
Well, we talked about big clubs making big moves. I mean, I don't think we've mentioned Real Madrid and their business in getting players like Theo Hernandez, like possibly Dani Ceballos, who had a good U21 for Spain. But I think the one team that's been quiet all summer long, and it's really surprised me, is Barcelona. You know, they get their new manager in Ernesto Valverde, and you know, a lot of noise has been made. They sold off Jeremy Mathieu to Sporting Lisbon. They only got the Fleu back from Everton, but other than that, there's not been a lot of business by Barcelona. I mean, the one transfer that's been demonstrated around Twitter, around social media, around all the news outlets is Marco Verratti. You know, it's shifted attention, then it's quieted down. Now we don't even know where it is at this time. But that's another player who, you know, I think Barcelona are desperately trying to get to get that midfield back to what it was, to, you know, provide depth, to provide youth. You know, with someone like Andres Iniesta, all right, while he is a talented player, he's not getting any younger. You know, what's going to be the situation with players like Ivan Rakitic or players like Andre Gomes or any of those players as well. Or Busquets as well, like I said. So it's we're just gonna have to wait and see what's gonna happen with this Verratti situation. You know, he said it on a video on PSG Twitter, saying that his agent was supposedly hearing that PSG were treating him like a prisoner, that they didn't want to sell him, and then PSG makes this official video saying that those rumors are fake. So it's been a soap opera of situations with him and the club. So yeah, that's going to be interesting to see what Barcelona will be doing by the end of the summer, if they can get anyone to straighten their team.
It's true. You bring up a great point. A team that is rich beyond dreams, being very quiet, is unusual. From the Marco Verratti side of it, I think with Verratti, one thing that he's probably focused on, or significantly focused on, is the fact that he wants to remain healthy going into the World Cup. He missed the Euros with the groin injury last year, so I think that's one of the top things on his mind. And maybe he feels like he's getting overused a little bit at PSG, and he's probably worried about being knocked out of a World Cup year where he's going to certainly feature as a center midfielder for the Italian national team. So that saga is definitely going to be important to keep an eye on, as well as, like you had mentioned, Harry, the Danilo Alexandro situation, I think, is one that's going to bear watching. especially with, you know, one of those two backs is going to end up on Juventus, and I think the other one is probably going to end up on Chelsea. And then where does that leave Real Madrid, you know, with Danilo going out? So we'll have to see where that happens. So, Harry, I do want to thank you for joining me and Rob tonight. It was definitely a pleasure to have you on the show, and we look forward to many, many more times to have you on, not only this week in football here, but as well on the main show on Low Limit Football, so we can discuss everything from Chelsea football to transfer window.
Oh, I had an absolutely fantastic time. Thank you for having me on, and I'm looking forward to future shows.
Definitely. And Rob, you know, thank you again, as always. You and I will return. The plan is right now to return on Monday night. I will have to be doing the show on location, but the plan is to be live on Monday night for the next, let me just look at a calendar here real quick, the next three Monday nights, 17th, 24th, and the 31st, and then we will be off for a couple of weeks leading into the new season. So, Rob, I'll see you Monday night.
Absolutely.
Awesome. All right, gentlemen, I appreciate both of you coming on. And that was This Week in Football for July 12th, 2017, the transfer edition. I am your host, Joe Uccello. Thanks for joining us, and good night.